This October, Tanger invites you to shop pink and save lives. Your donation of $10 or more to the Breast Cancer Research Foundation helps fuel innovative research that brings us closer to a cure. It also unlocks exclusive savings from brands like Coach, Crocs, Columbia Factory Store, and more to shop all month long. Join us as we mark 30 years of advancing research and empowering hope. Donate and access your exclusive savings today at Tanger.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So, you are a skeptic, Worf. I like that.
How do you know my name?
We have met before. I appeared to you in a vision in the caves of Nomad. You were just a child then. I told you that you would do something that no Klingon had ever done before.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Positively Trek Book Club. I'm Dan Gunther, and with me, because we're talking comics, is the wonderful Brandi Jackala. Brandi, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much. So excited to be here, as per usual.
Absolutely. Well, this is one that I've been looking forward to for a while, and it's been a long time coming because we are going to be talking about the big IDW crossover event of last year, I guess. Star Trek Day of Blood, which, you know, hopefully we don't say blood so many times that, you know, YouTube demonetizes the video version of this podcast or anything like that. But yeah, we've got a bloody bunch of issues to talk about here. 7 issues in this hardcover collection that we're talking about. This came out back in March, I believe. And yeah, 7 issues spread across, you know, a couple one-shots, Defiant and the Star Trek flagship series, and they even threw in a free comic book day story in there as well. So a lot to talk about with this one.
Yeah, just to mess people up, because there are only limited amounts of the free comic book day comics. And so If you didn't get your hands on them, guess it sucks to be you. Hint, everyone, the free comic book day issue is available on Kindle at $0.00.
Nice. So yeah, if you are reading this via individual issues, which Brandi is doing here, you'll probably have to get your hands on it that way if you didn't grab it back on Free Comic Book Day 2023. It is, of course, included in this gorgeous hardcover edition that, you know, if you want to pick up, it's got all the stories in the right order. Although, we were talking before the show, this has been a recurring thing. We've talked about this in the past. These hardcover editions, they like to present them in a way that makes it like, oh, it's all one story. We'll show you where the divisions, where the comics are, but we won't tell you what issue it is or anything like that. It's just, you know, another chapter in this story. And add to that, that in the table of contents, and I put that in quotes because it's a very non-functional table of contents, it lists all of the issues that are in this book, but not the correct order they're in, or at least not even an order they're in. So it says Prelude with the credits, and then Day of Blood, which is a single standalone issue. That's the second part of the story. And then it says Defiant number 6-7, Star Trek number 11-12, with the credits for the writers and art and stuff. Yes, those issues are all in this story at that point, but it's Defiant number 6, then Star Trek number 11, then Defiant number 7, then Star Trek number 12, which you wouldn't know if you just read this hardcover edition. So I guess it's functional. It's a way to read the story if you have just the hardcover. But, you know, if anybody out there is collaborating with a friend who's reading the individual issues and you intend to do a podcast together, It's a little bit annoying to have to actually find out what the correct order is. It's not particularly difficult, but it's just not a roadblock I expected to have.
Yeah, it's ridiculous, because who does a table of contents out of order?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yes, you grouped the issues together with what series they're in, but that's not the order in which you read them.
Yeah.
And that just is something that really bugs me.
It's weird. It's definitely weird. Mm. And then I should say the final issue in the story is one that I'm really looking forward to talking about, and that is Day of Blood, Shax's best day.
I'm so here for it.
Yeah, let's jump right in then and get to these stories so that we can get there, because I have lots to say. So, Day of Blood, everything in the Defiant and the Star Trek comic series has kind of been building to this that we've covered so far. And the first story in this, like I said, is Prelude to Day of Blood, the Free Comic Book Day issue, written by Jackson Lansing, Colin Kelly, and Christopher Cantwell, with art by Mike Feehan. And this is basically telling the story of the USS Santa Cruz and Captain Meyerson being invited to Korvat Colony by the Emperor himself to witness these Côte Baval festivities. And it turns into a day of blood.
Mm. Now, question, did they ever show the ship in all of its glory in the content of these pages?
Yep, the first panel.
Okay, because it's been like 12 hours since I've read it, and I couldn't remember. Because, you know, I first read the Santa Cruz, and I'm like, oh, is that a California class? Because there is a Santa Cruz, California, but there's also a Santa Cruz, New Mexico, probably.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's probably more than one city named Santa Cruz, so I'm pretty sure it's not a California class, if I remember right.
No, I think it's, my best guess would be a sheer car class from Star Trek Online, like one of the starter ships you can choose, either Miranda, sheer car, or Centaur, and I think it's a sheer car class.
Cool. Nice to know. Mm-hmm. See, because Dan knows everything, you guys.
That's my best guess. Somebody could tell me I'm wrong, but... So yeah, this story, it's a shorter story. It's just kind of, you know, a free comic book day thing, right? They're not going to give away a ton for free, but they're going to hook you into this and get you excited for Day of Blood. And I think this does a good job. I mean, so this story, we saw the aftermath of it in Defiant, and this is kind of telling a little bit of the backstory of what got there. And by the end of this, it looks like Kalis has killed all of the non-believers on Korvat Colony and just massacred his own people here. His soldiers of the Red Path destroy all the festivities. And also, Kalis himself leads a personal attack on the Santa Cruz. And it looks like he's killed Captain Meyerson, which is the state of affairs that the Defiant crew finds in their previous issue. So looks can be deceiving. By the way.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I realized that several issues later.
Yeah, I was just like, wow, too bad that captain died, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, no, wait.
It's like, oh, he was all right, you know? He was just doing his job. Also, you know, it occurs to me, the soldiers of the Red Path and whatever, just cutting a swath through all the non-believers and whatnot. It kind of reminds me of something. Oh, what does it remind me of? Oh, yes, Nazis! That's what it reminds me of.
Yeah, a little bit of fascism here.
Oh, a little bit? A lot. It is just straight up drenched in blood fascism.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess I don't have too much to say about this. I do like the artwork. I think Mike Feehan did a really good job. A little bit more of a slightly simplistic style than we get from Angel and Zweta's work, which we'll see kind of the majority of in this story. But I really like it. I think he has a really good, I really got a good sense of space in his, like the final kind of Batleth stuff on the bridge and all of that stuff. It looked really good.
I agree. I had no complaints with the artwork whatsoever. I thought it was well laid out, well constructed. Things were placed well, like you said, giving a good idea of the space. So, yes, I have zero notes on that.
No notes. It's good. Excellent. Well, I guess let's jump right into the next issue, which is just the Day of Blood one shot. It says Day of Blood number one, the actual title Day of Blood. This is the only issue of it other than, I guess, Shax's Best Day, kind of the subtitle one later. But yeah, this is, if you're following along in the comics, it says on the front cover, Day of Blood, part 1 of 5 in the bottom left corner. So
I appreciate that you know what you're getting into, that you know how many issues the story is going to last, so that you make sure that you get all of them. Very smart.
Yeah, Day of Blood, number 1 of 5, and this is the 2nd of 7 issues in the Day of Blood collection. So, yep, you know exactly how many you're reading.
Yep. Starts with sort of a one-shot, ends with sort of a one-shot. Mm-hmm. Well, definitely it ends with a one-shot. It's actually says one-shot on the cover of the comic.
Yeah. So Day of Blood number 1, again written by Christopher Cantwell, Colin Kelly, and Jackson Lansing. So all of the Defiant and Star Trek writers coming together for this one. And the art in this one is by Ramon Rosanas. And again, different from the Angel and Zueta art we'll get later in the comic. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So the last time we saw the Theseus and Defiant crews, we had Worf racing to Kronos and sending a distress call or a call to sorry, Worf, I know you don't send distress calls. That's my bad. Not distress. Call to arms call, I guess, to Sisko and the Theseus to join him at Kronos to counter Kalis's plans here. And that's what we get. We get the Theseus arriving at Kronos, and I guess there's just so many ships around that they don't even really notice a Starfleet ship coming in, which is lucky. But they detect that the Defiant is on the surface, and they beam down to meet Worf and his crew. Yeah, things haven't gone that great for the Defiant lately. It's not in pieces on the surface, but it's pretty close to it.
Yeah, it is. It has not fared well. Even though it's a rugged little ship, per Tom Paris, it has not fared well.
And I didn't even remember this. I'm just looking at the page now. I forgot that Worf actually complained about Sisko calling it a distress call. I forgot that part.
Oh, yeah.
So Sisko says, "We received your distress call." And Worf immediately says, "It was a request for aid, not a distress call." But Sisko kind of takes umbrage. He says, "Considering the state of my ship, I would disagree." Reminding Worf whose ship he has stolen.
Yeah, the snark between these two.
Yeah, that was something that I found interesting throughout this whole thing. Like, they had a big falling out, of course, a while back in the Star Trek series, and they pull no punches here. They are not happy to be around one another.
No, and honestly, I can see both points of view. I really can. It's like there's not one person's right, one person's wrong. It's like they're both right and they're both wrong. So.
The other thing that I'm enjoying here is I hadn't really thought it through before, but I love how just about everybody on one ship kind of has a counterpart on the other ship. So, of course, obviously Data and Lore. You've also got Tom and B'Elanna, and you've got, I didn't think of this, Ro Laren and Shax.
Yep.
And the sparks fly between them a little bit, too.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, I will have fun talking about that. Just talking about Ro Laren in general and a certain person's response to something. So.
Yes, absolutely. I love also the little bit of a commentary on some of the absolute weirdness of what's going on. Like, Sisko's like, "Sela is on your ship? What the crap?"
Yeah, that's just everybody. It's just everybody. I mean, do they have Armas hiding somewhere? I mean,
I mean, they have Lore and Sela, so probably.
He's resting in a pool down on Deck 40. Not that they have 40 decks in that ship, but, you know. Looks can be deceiving. You know, we see the ships from the outside, but we can't always really get a feel for what they look like on the inside.
Well, we've got basically this announcement by Kalis about, you know, his plans and that sort of stuff. His vamping, I guess, villain vamping at this point. But he's launching this Day of Blood, and it's scary how many people are marching to his cause. It seems like everyone is either being killed or following him, and that's not great.
Sounds a little bit like, oh, Hitler. Because how many people marched to that guy? I mean, just from his words, from his impassioned speeches and the things that he said he wanted to do. And I'm like, this is your guy? Really? This is your guy? And I think the comparison is that both people were filled with fear. And both people basically spoke out against the things they hated most in themselves in order to deflect that they were really just weak, weak people. And that's what people like that do. That's what fascists do. They project all of their insecurities out onto another target and then kill that target and thinks that it makes them feel better. And it changes nothing. What happens when there's no one left to kill? What happens when you have no more enemies? Then you turn on each other. That's how it goes. That's how it goes with fascism.
Well, and the other diabolical thing about fascism as well is they count on everyone else to, like, who is opposed to them, assuming that they're going to stay within the lines and follow the rules and stuff. And that's why, you know, when someone comes along who just flips the whole table over, you have groups of people who are going, well, we've got to, you know, that's for the courts to decide. That's for this to do. We have to, you know, we have to be the better person. And generally, I agree with that sentiment. Like, I think that's great. But they are also counting on the other side to stay within the lines when they themselves have no intention of doing that whatsoever. Mm. And I feel like we see a little bit of that in this as well with Martok and the Klingon High Council and stuff, where, you know, that said, it's a little bit tougher comparison because, you know, political assassinations and that kind of thing are kind of de rigueur for Klingons, right? So what are their lines? I guess maybe there's a little bit more allowance for that kind of operation, but it still feels like this is a threat that we've never seen before in the Klingon Empire, except maybe, I guess, the first Kalis.
Yeah, you find out some interesting things about that first Kalis, don't we?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we'll get to that, like a lot of that stuff in later issues too.
Yes.
I love the kind of deconstruction of the Klingon idea of honor later on.
Oh yeah, that actually was really impressive.
Nah, I was kind of waiting for Ezri Dax to poke her head in and go, told ya.
Oh, if only.
Well, yeah, so we've got strife in the Klingon High Council. Martok is being outright challenged by the followers of Kalis on the council, and fighting happening in the streets and, of course, at the site of where the Defiant is crashed among these other ships, and also in orbit. There's a bunch of ships starting to go after the Theseus now as well. So things are heating up.
They are. Well, and the interesting thing about all of these sort of stories, you know, like the stories that are told of the original Kalis and everything like that. Here's the thing, though. Those stories are always written by the winners.
Mm-hmm.
They always have a point of view. They're not neutral in any way. And so it's interesting to see how much is built upon the foundation of Kalis and how that's really just a house built on sand.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing I want to talk about with this story is the coming together of two very important things as well.
Yes.
And this is, you know, in Solo, a Star Wars film, we see how Han Solo got his gun and his little dice and his ship and all this stuff. In this issue, we see how Shax got his pipe.
Oh, Shax.
Shax is wonderful.
I want to see just a comic for Shax. Just following Shax on any given day, I would be so there for it.
Well, I mean, we get our wish later.
But I mean, like an ongoing series, just following Shax. This is Shax's life, and we are just privileged to watch it happen. Mm-hmm.
I also love this back and forth between Shax and Ro here regarding the pipe and all of this. And Ro headbutting a Klingon and taking him out. Just the little, like, Shax, I've never seen someone best a Klingon with a headbutt before. And Ro says, and I didn't even need a strong pipe. I love these two.
I'll bet she had a headache afterward, though.
Oh, my God.
Definitely
I can't even
bruising.
Imagine.
Definitely bruising later.
Oof. I don't think that would end well in actuality. But good for her. That was awesome. Meanwhile, we've got Worf and Sisko making their way to the spire that Kalis is inhabiting, with his bird of prey looming above it, and they've got to make their way there to take him out, basically. So that's the adventure they're on, which includes riding, you know, buggies that get blown up, and a lot of snark between the two of them.
Buggies that get blown up never happens in Star Trek.
No, never.
Never.
Yeah. But I guess they ran over a mine. That's not good. Mines are bad.
Yeah, that's the danger with vehicles that move that fast. You don't have time to see an explosive device.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're walking along, you have the chance to, you know, kind of poke around, see if there's anything waiting underneath. But you don't have that kind of time here. You got to get to the spire. You got to get there fast. So, yeah.
Well, luckily, Sisko, you know, is injured, but not debilitatingly so. So they're still going to make their way to where Kalis is. And that's kind of where this issue ends. And we're going through it fairly quickly because, like I said, there's 7 issues. So we're going to be here a little while. But thoughts on Day of Blood number 1?
Well, honestly, I had to go back and read Star Trek 10 because I'm just like, I need to remember where we left off. And so I reread 10. So I read 8 issues instead of 7. But I needed that because there's so much going on between these series that I can't always keep them straight. I'm like, okay, was this Star Trek or was this Defiant? And so I thought, I'm just going to read issue 10 again. And that actually helped a lot to remind me where we were, what we were doing, who was on what ship. So I felt like this ended too soon, honestly, this issue. I felt like I didn't get enough progression in the story, really. There were fun times, of course, with Ro and Shax, because honestly, you could put those two together in a room and just watch them all day. Just watch them snipe at each other all day. And I'm not complaining about the fact that there wasn't a lot of exposition, because honestly, this is ramping up. This is getting really serious. And so they're not spending a lot of time on exposition. They're like, go, 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 go. But and at the same time, I'm like, this was over too fast. Okay, next issue, next issue. Gotta know what happens.
I do appreciate a little bit that they're setting things up. And
yeah,
I feel like there's probably a little bit of calculus on their part, as with all people who produce comics, that, you know, if someone out there is subscribed to Star Trek and Star Trek Defiant and not really paying attention to things, they might miss this issue and just be reading. So, I mean, I can see kind of putting the pieces on the board, but not wanting to pay anything off that they've set up. So I kind of get that. And I'm sure the next few issues do a good job of recapping what's happened so far and getting you up to speed if you somehow missed that issue. So yeah, I liked it. It's a nice setup, but that's mostly what it is putting the pieces on the board and setting up the chessboard.
And boy, are those pieces going to get knocked around.
Well, with that in mind, let's go to the next issue, which is Defiant number 6. So on the cover, it says Day of Blood, part 2 of 5. Issue number 6 of Defiant, and this is written by Christopher Cantwell with art by Angel Unzueta. So that usual team up of those two.
Indeed.
And yeah, we start out where we left off with Worf and Sisko making their way to the spire that that Kalis is in. And again, I just love this back and forth between them. There's a lot of vitriol. You know, Worf saying that, you know, Benjamin looks angry, and Sisko says, it's because I am. And Sisko says, maybe I should carry you like I did Dax in the jungle, kind of reminding him of the time that Sisko told him he would never make captain because he made a terrible mistake in that mission. And I really like this moment because Sisko tells him, you did the right thing that day. And, you know, Worf is kind of incredulous. And Sisko says, you did the right thing, but I said the right thing that day. You know, he's two different roles here. His friend Dax was saved, but as the captain, he had to say that to Worf. He said, yeah, you'll never make captain. And Worf's like, but I command the Defiant now. It's like, yeah, you stole that ship, dude. Oh, boy.
Yeah. Yeah. Each of them trying to justify their own failings.
Yeah. It very much reminds me of that argument where, you know, neither person is willing to, they want to win. Mm-hmm. They want to come out on top. And to use a phrase that gets thrown around a lot these days, neither of them are covering themselves in glory here.
No, they're really not. And see, that's the funny thing. It's like, if I were in this situation like that, and this is just me personally, I have found that the best way to get through a situation like that is to just not engage at all.
Yeah.
Let them say whatever they want. Don't respond to it, because that actually frustrates people way more than fighting with you, because they're just like, they just keep saying stuff, and you just don't respond. It's as if they're not even talking.
Mm-hmm.
And they can't get anywhere, and they eventually just stop.
Absolutely. Well, in orbit, the Theseus is not having a good time of it, getting kind of harried by these Klingon ships. I do have to say, I love Spock and Scotty reunited as well.
I know. It's the best.
It's so nice. And like this kind of casual back and forth they have. Like, I actually really enjoyed in TOS when, you know, Kirk and a bunch of people were off somewhere else and Spock was in command and he and Scotty had to kind of do things together. There's a few episodes where that happened and they always had a really interesting time together. Like, even think back to the Galileo 7, where Spock is basically arguing with every member of the crew and they're having problems with him. Meanwhile, Scotty's just working to repair the shuttle, and every time he and Spock interact, it's just very professional, and they have this, like, I don't know, Scotty always seems to have gotten Spock a bit, and I like that.
I agree, and I think that they carry that into this particular series.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, honestly, I would read a comic with just the adventures of Spock and Scotty.
Yeah. Scotty asking if he can give Spock a hug. And Spock just looks at him and raises an eyebrow.
Like, no. No. I don't do that.
All right, then. Good to see you still.
And see, and that's the best thing about Scotty. He just, you know, he gave it a shot. No hard feelings that Spock is not going to hug him. He's just, I'm just glad you're here. I love that.
Yeah. And Spock gets Scotty, too. So, you know, the Theseus has been almost entirely redesigned by you, correct? Aye, it has. Then I assume, as Jim might say, it has a few tricks up its sleeve.
You damn right.
So there's some great stuff going on there. But let's get back to the capital city of Kronos. And we've got a sentence I never thought I'd hear myself say. We've got Dr. Crusher and Sela working together to try and, I guess, get into the building and see what the state of the government is at this point, along with the unnamed medic aboard the Defiant, this Orion character they picked up along the way.
Can we just call her the Renegade?
Sure, the Renegade. I like that. I know, I'm pretty sure in later issues, I haven't gotten there yet, but I think they give her a name or they reveal her name at some point. But
I'll never tell.
I don't know what that is yet. Well, they do get in thanks to the Renegade, and they discover Martok being Martok and slaying a bunch of council members that are traitors. And I think he's keeping count, too. Oh, yeah, there we go. 11. 11 traitorous Takek dead.
You know, there's a lot of just executing traitors in the hierarchy recently. Mm-hmm. First the Cardassians, now Klingons. I mean, it's just a lot of assassination going on.
But Martok himself is in bad shape, too. So he's taken out these 11 guys and then just falls over.
Like you do.
Yeah, and Dr. Crusher, battlefield medic here, does not want Martok to die, so she's telling people, like, grab bodies, bring them over here, we'll use a mop and a bucket if we need to, but we need blood.
Dr. Crusher's a badass in any incarnation, whether it's on screen, whether it's in a comic, Dr. Crusher is a badass. Yeah. And she even has a thing later that made me laugh out loud. And I know you know what it is. And we'll talk about it when we get to it. Just an Absolutely. Offhand line to some people, but to me, I howled with laughter.
I'm sure we'll get there. I'm curious about this now. But from there, we join Lore and Data, who are working together to get to Korath's laboratory, this Klingon scientist, whom you might remember from the final episode of Voyager. He did the chronodeflector thing for Admiral Janeway, but he's ostensibly working for Kalis. Maybe has his own. Well, we'll get there. But Lore and Data are speaking of badasses, we get to see, like, you know, the true capabilities of the Sung type androids here. This was fun.
Mm-hmm.
And Lore and Data working together too. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And I was reading this and I was enjoying it. And I was thinking, how long until Lore betrays him? Because that is what Lore does. So I was just waiting for it.
Yeah. Well, we'll get there, but like Data, damn it, Data.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, there are things to talk about when we get there.
So there, yeah, we'll leave them for now. We're jumping all over the place in this comic. We've also got Talir and Lily, Shax and Ro all doing their thing, basically fighting in the streets. And there's some pretty cool stuff here. Like, this is a very visual comic. There's, you know, the fighting where, like, for example, they're getting to the top of this tower and then destroying the ladder that the Klingons are chasing them up on. Like, visually, there's just some really cool stuff in this book.
Yeah, it is very visually appealing, and it does tell a lot with pictures instead of words, which sometimes in comics, and it just depends on the comics, the visuals aren't enough. There's sometimes when I'm just like, I can't figure out what you're trying to show me here.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have that problem in this,
no.
in these issues at all. I knew exactly what they were doing at every moment with dialogue or without. So I just really appreciate the layout of the art and, you know, use of space and all that other stuff that we said about the first issue. So yeah, I just appreciate that so that I'm not confused.
Yeah.
Because I'm a very visual person and I can usually figure these things out, but sometimes it's not enough.
Absolutely.
It is, yeah. is plenty here.
Yeah, they do a really good job. And they also do a really good job going back and forth between these high action things
yes.
going on and then the quieter character moments, which is kind of what we get now when we go back to the Defiant and we catch up with Tom and B'Elanna, who are very bickery, but like, I wouldn't even say bickery because it's about some pretty important stuff, like where their daughter is right now, how responsible or not either or both of them are as parents. Yeah, there's some really good stuff here. You know, summing it up as their work-life balance is completely out of whack. I don't know that that's the only issue, but okay, we'll start with that one.
Well, that's an interesting thing. Because for both Tom and B'Elanna, work is a big part of their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And see, that's the interesting thing about this Star Trek future, is that sometimes we still couch things in our perceptions of what work and life should be. And because we are the people that we are now, we do, you know, people like you and I, we try to make work life balance. I don't live to work. I work to live.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because that's the way capitalism works, basically. But in this future where capitalism isn't a thing, where you can just go off and do something that you want to do, that you're good at, that you have a passion for, and do that as your job, and you're not even getting paid for it, you're doing it for the love of doing it. When does that become one or the other? It is work and it is life.
Mm-hmm.
So is it really a thing about work-life balance, or is it just life balance? Because honestly, their work isn't like work to them. Mm-hmm. What would that be like? To just go and follow your passion?
That'd be amazing.
Not have to worry about money or food or housing that's just all provided. And what would that be like?
Mm-hmm. That would be incredible.
Imagine what we could achieve as humans if we had our basic needs provided for And we got to do what we wanted for work.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I can't even visualize.
Yeah, that would be incredible. To live in the Star Trek universe.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Yeah. Which ship would I pick? Oh, man. Because you know I'm going to be on a ship.
I used to think I would be, but now I think I'd work in a library.
Dang. Actually. Actually, that's a really good point. Because I love libraries. And I love books. And I know what you're referencing right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's get back to Tom and B'Elanna here, though. I love also that, like, Tom is annoyed that B'Elanna left Miral with Harry.
Tom would have done the same damn thing. You know it.
Oh, totally. Yeah. What is he? When we get back home, she'll have seen every holo program in existence and conned him out of a metric ton of replicated junk food.
I hope not. I don't know how a child could eat a metric ton of junk food.
Well, they're working things out. They're going to work because that's what they do. They're going to fix the Defiant, I guess. They'll focus on that. For the end of this issue, we get back to Lore and Data confronting Korath here. And I love this scene. It's so good. They take him out, basically. We also learn that he's kind of doing his own thing, Korath. He's kind of not really following Kalis. But the very end of this is where I'm like, Data, I'm going to smack you. What are you doing? Yes, Lore is going to eventually betray them all. But, like, first of all, okay, Lore's pun when Data shoots Korath. And he's like, that was stunning. Am I right? Data's like, a decent attempt at humor.
Yeah, because right now Data's got his emotion chip off. So he's not reacting emotionally at all.
Yeah. So Lore apologizes. He, in this moment, he says, how do I say I'm sorry? Data says, for attempting to kill me? Like you just did, I suppose. Although I am not certain how effective the words are. And they kind of seem to be coming to this understanding. Data says, I have always appreciated who you are, Lore. I hope you know that. But it is precisely for that reason that, following the completion of this mission, I will ensure that you are deactivated and disassembled once more. I hope you know that as well. And you see Lore's face just change. And I'm like, Data, no, maybe you should have had your emotion chip on to realize that that is a bad idea.
Yeah, why say it out loud, Data? You didn't need to say it out loud. You didn't need to tell Lore your plans.
No.
You never tell the bad guy your plans. Have you learned nothing, sir?
Oh, boy. That was a great ending to this comic, but, like, also just like, Data, no.
Why'd you do that, man? I actually even just said, what? I read that panel, I'm like, well, now you've ensured that Lore's going to betray you, Data. Well done.
Mm-hmm.
Well done.
Which is, I mean, I guess that's a little bit in keeping with some themes we've seen before, too. That, like, I guess I'm thinking of season 3 of Star Trek Picard, right? Where there's a little bit more understanding, I think, given to Lore than previously, which I really appreciated.
Mm,
you know, he's kind of motivated by the fact that Data has gotten all these opportunities and Lore has been continually deactivated, beamed out into space, like, never, I mean, he's brought it on himself, obviously, in a lot of cases. But if you feel like if someone gave him a bit of a chance and you know, that things might have turned out differently, as we've kind of seen a little bit in this story, too. Like, he's been good up to this point. I don't think Data's wrong. I think Data's absolutely right. But just don't tell him that.
Yeah, don't say it out loud.
Yeah.
Keep that inside. Keep that inside. And Data, of all people, should know that. The fact that he said it was probably, he probably thought he was showing trust of some kind.
Yeah.
Dude, no.
Yeah, or like consideration. Mm-hmm. Like, just so you know.
Yeah. I'm I'm not just gonna suddenly flip your switch. I'm gonna give you the courtesy of telling you that I'm going to disassemble you.
Oh boy. Well, the other thing I want to quickly talk about is these log entries and various documents that they use to good effect. In a lot of cases, things that I wasn't expecting. So, for example, at the end of this issue, we get a journal entry, I guess, by Colonel Worf, the attorney of Kirk and McCoy in Star Trek VI and grandfather of Worf. And you know, all these different things. There's one earlier in this issue by Worf after they retake Deep Space Nine and the Klingons came to their aid, and kind of some of his misgivings about Kalis in that one as well. So I love these unexpected little things that give some insight into this story. Like, they're really doing a good job of filling in the backstory of this and making it pertinent to the Star Trek universe at large. I really like that.
I do too. And it's in keeping with what people in Starfleet do. You know, this mm-hmm. is what they do. They write logs.
Yeah.
So I love that they use that as a device to add context. And because, mm-hmm. you know, in some comics it might be out of place, but in Star Trek fits perfectly.
Well, I guess from there, let's move on to part 3 of 5 of Day of Blood. And that is Star Trek number 11. So this is the flagship series and written by Colin Kelly and Jackson Lanzig with art by Angel and Zweta. So, yeah. We're continuing on this story. I was curious how this would work with the different writing teams, kind of like, I'm assuming they're breaking the story together and then kind of writing their parts. I found that it worked really well. All these different writers writing the same characters. I think they did a really good job of feeling like it's one story without, you know, any kind of like, oh, this writer does it this way, but this writer does it that way.
Yeah, the continuity is very, very good. Mm-hmm. At no point would I have thought that there were, you know, different writers and different groupings of writers throughout this particular story. It didn't, you know, I didn't really even look at that until after I had finished reading mm-hmm. the comics. So, and that's actually really impressive because they all obviously know the voices of these characters and maintain them at, you know, in character throughout the entire miniseries.
Mm-hmm. So we get basically a continuation of what's going on with Tom and B'Elanna. And this is where they say, you know, Paris says, honestly, screw work-life balance. As long as we're working, we're still alive. Kind of, I think, bringing that conversation to its natural point when you're crashed in the middle of Kronos with fighting all around you. Maybe let's focus on the job at hand.
Yeah, and you don't have a deflector dish.
Yeah, that's important. They don't have a deflector dish. That's going to become a central thing of some of the stuff in this story. So, yeah. Meanwhile, we join back up with Ro and Talir and Lily, who are working to get the planetary communications back up. And I love this conversation here where Ro is talking about this being a Kobayashi Maru, and Lily is like, no, that's not what this is. And they have this argument back and forth about what exactly is the Kobayashi Maru and what's it all about.
Oh, it's a brilliant conversation. And Lily gets the last word.
Mm-hmm.
And it's brilliant because she's like, we're Starfleet. We don't leave people behind. It's like, you leave people behind all the time. You sacrifice yourselves for the greater good. You're all taught that you're supposed to do that. And it's dumb. And Lily's like, that's not what this is about. It's about when you're in a no-win situation and you know there's no way out. Do you look and do you blink? Do you blink? And Ro's face at that was just like, oh, snap. She got you.
And she left Ro speechless.
Yeah.
Like, who does that?
Lily Sato is the only person who does that.
That was amazing.
I saw little bits of Hoshi in her right then. It really made me happy.
Mm-hmm. And I love because Ro's being all like, oh, die for a badge and blah, mm-hmm. blah, blah. And so after, you know, that mic drop moment by Lily, she goes back to work and says, you're welcome to leave, but we're staying. If there's a single chance we can pull this off, we're taking it. And Talir, with their addition to the conversation, After all, it is a very nice badge to die for.
Talir. Oh, so dear Talir. I just, I want to know so much more about Talir.
Yeah, absolutely.
We get a little tiny crumb, in exposition.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still not enough. It's like, you need to give me more.
Yeah. Well, those of you who are reading the comics right now, I'm not caught up, but I do have a website where I post the synopses of new issues as they come out and stuff. So I know you're all learning a lot more about them right now. So
yeah.
I'm jealous. I'm looking forward to catching up.
I'm just, you know, I can't talk about what I know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I can. I'm not going to.
So meanwhile, back in the High Council chambers with Crusher and the Renegade trying to save Martok, we've also got Sela there as well, which I'm like, oh, Sela in the Klingon High Council chambers. That's not great. Can I say this conversation between her and Crusher is so good about Tasha Yar and Crusher just slapping her mm-hmm. in the face?
Oh, it was so great.
Oh my God. After Sela's talking about, Tasha and dishonoring her memory, basically.
Yeah. Oh, the last thing she said before Crusher smacked the hell out of her, I'm like, yes, thank you. Because that's what we all wanted to do.
Yeah. That said, right after that moment where Sela pushes right past Crusher and presses her thumb against Martok's wound, brings him, back to consciousness and demands the planetary communication override codes, and Martok gives them to her. I kind of love that too. And then Sela's parkour across the Klingon city. And then her like Naruto run. It was great. Oh, I was not expecting any of that. That's great.
Yeah, she just finally decided, okay, fine. If I want to get out of here, I got to do this. And she's still so, in the back of her mind, she's still got this thing of making herself valuable to the Romulan hierarchy, wanting to move up. And so that's probably fueling a lot of the stuff that she does. She's not doing it out of the kindness of her heart. She's doing it to forward her own wants and desires. And, just because she's doing the right thing at the moment, that doesn't mean that she's ever going to do the right thing again.
Yeah.
And I also was very suspicious at how easily Martok gave up those codes.
I liked the, Orcalis wins. I guess that's what he was also delirious.
Yeah, that is fair. That is fair. But so. I'm just like, okay, all right.
Yeah. I do love also Sela, jumping into where Talir and Lily and Ro are and giving them the codes. And then, Ro and Sela just kind of stand back sniping at each other a little bit. And Lily's like, hey, you're going to just sit there jabbing or do you want to do the work? I love her. She's great.
Lily is magnificent in every way.
So back to Lore and Data and the aftermath of this revelation by Data. Oh my God. I do like Lore that's like, turn on the emotion chip. Data, turn on the emotion chip. But then what Data says, I absolutely love this. Lore's like, turn on the emotion chip, then tell me again how you want me to die. And Data says, Lore, I do not want you to die. In fact, that is the very reason I have kept my emotion chip offline since our arrival on Kronos. After all, over the last decade, you have repeatedly attempted to murder my friends, my family, even my cat. You once threatened a child with the death he deserved. Talking about Wesley there. It is extremely unlikely that my emotion chip will respond to your presence with empathy, understanding, or kindness, as my positronic net has a perfect record of your many atrocities. In fact, were I to activate it at this moment, it is entirely likely I would kill you myself.
Damn, son.
Wow. And they just a beat as they look at each other.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. How can, an emotionless being evoke this much emotion reading what he's saying? I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. And is anyone surprised with what happens next? No, I don't think we are.
Absolutely not.
No.
So they find out that the transport net is down. Sato has worked her magic. And Lore, of course, overrides and site-to-site transports away. Yeah. Data, you're too honest, buddy.
Yeah. The thing is that he can lie. It's not like it's not part of his programming. He can lie. But that's just not Data. I mean, he could do it if he has to.
Yeah.
Kind of like how Spock can lie when he has to, when it's for the greater good. Or, you know, when it comes to mentioning that he's related to people like Sarek or Michael Burnham or Cybok.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I felt bad for Data. And at the same time, it's like, we all saw it coming. How come you didn't?
And yeah, the naivete a little bit where he contacts the Theseus and says, I regret to inform you that Lore has once again chosen Chaoth, and expanded with Korath. I was reading ahead and saw Korath.
Oh, please leave that in. That's hilarious.
Oh.
Thank you for that.
You're very welcome.
Oh.
I regret to inform you that Lore has once again chosen Chaos and absconded with Korath. And I'm like, don't put it all on Lore. Like, come on, dude.
You had a hand in that, dude.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, he's informing the Theseus of this, but they've got more problems on their hands. They're fighting in orbit and having not a great time of it. Their shields, I think, in last issue were down to 4%, and now they're gone. Mm-hmm. Things are bad, basically. And the Klingons have deployed cleaves. They're going to try and cut them in half.
That's just mean.
Yeah.
You know, that's just mean. That's sinister. You know, you could just blow them up with a photon torpedo, couldn't you? But no, you want to make them suffer. You want to make it hurt. You want to make them die horribly instead of quickly.
Nah. So this scene here, this was one of my favorite bits, and it's Spock and Scotty are kind of both in command, and they're just giving suggestions as to what they should do. And Lieutenant Discini, I love her. Mm-hmm. So Spock's like, now I suggest we move to heading 2330. And she's like, no more suggestions. This is a fucking starship and we're fucking Starfleet. One of you old farts, take the chair and start giving orders. Yes, I love that.
Oh, the women getting it done.
It was so good. And again, the writers of these comics using these moments of silence so, like, perfectly, where Spock and Scotty just kind of look at each other. And meanwhile, off to the, we hear, boom. Like, things are happening, but there's just like this, it's like, yeah, she's right. And they put Spock in command, which is something he's never wanted. But the best leaders are always the people who didn't want it, right? So
yeah, that's because they don't want to make a mistake. They don't want to lose lives because of a choice that they made. Because they have conscience. They have a conscience. And that's why when someone doesn't want leadership, that's why they make a good leader, is because they have a conscience, because they have empathy. Otherwise, you can't be truly effective.
Yeah. So meanwhile, they're going to need the Defiant for whatever they're planning next, Spock says. And luckily, the repairs are mostly done, except they still don't have a deflector dish. But it turns out they do, because Shax has done something.
I just love,
we're informed. Yeah. You can find out in another issue.
It's like, hey, Lana, you know that deflector dish we didn't have? Yeah. We have it now.
I love that.
Fantastic. And,
we've got Shax riding the Defiant into orbit, or not quite into orbit, but he doesn't want them to beam him aboard quite yet because he's having the best day of his life, which, as we're told, we can read in a 30-page issue coming later, which we will be getting to for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So the Defiant is climbing into orbit to assist the Theseus. And meanwhile, at the end of this, we get to Worf and Sisko finally getting to the spire where Kalis and his lieutenant, Alexander, I guess, are facing them here. And Alexander's just been amped up with the red whatever, the Ketracel red or whatever they're calling it now. And he's not in a good place. Also, he doesn't have great teeth.
No, he doesn't. I mean, Klingons in general have very pointy teeth. So do Ferengi. But anyway, Alexander, I feel a lot of sympathy for Alexander because, you know, knowing his background, it's not hard to see how he turned to the red path.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, he's been searching for himself all of his life, but he's trying to find himself outside of himself. And that's always been the problem. And, you know, a lot of that is Worf's fault. There are a lot of things that Worf could have done when he was younger that could have maybe allayed some of these things. But at the same time, Alexander's an adult now and he makes his own choices. But where are those choices coming from? He's making choices for the person he thinks he wants to be instead of the person that he is. And, you know, Worf's kind of been doing the same thing, if we're going to be honest.
Yeah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details.
This episode of Positively Trek is brought to you by our supporters on Patreon. A special thank you to our Constitution class supporters, Jim Stoffel, Joyce Mirren, and Paul D. Kinnear. To help out with the podcast, visit patreon.com/positivelytrek, where for a small monthly donation, you can get early access to ad-free episodes, shoutouts, exclusive content, associate producer credits, and more. Thank you so much for listening, and live long and prosper. And that's kind of where we start the next issue, which is issue number 7 of Star Trek Defiant, Day of Blood, part 4 of 5. And it's kind of this reckoning a little bit between Alexander and Worf, which was sad and good to read, though.
Yeah.
This is tough.
It is basically tough. It's hard. And it was upsetting. But it was also something that I saw coming.
And I mean, there's a lot, like, we'll come back to Worf and Alexander as well. There's stuff going on between Sisko and Kalis and this debate about the divinity of very, whatever. Like, Kalis is being bleh. But basically he fires this weapon and intending to destroy Sisko, but something is protecting Sisko and he's not quite getting destroyed here. And Kalis is, there's a look of awe on his face when he sees this and fear, which was interesting to see as well.
Indeed. It was, it reminded me of a line. He's only mostly dead. Mostly dead is slightly alive.
Yep. And so, yeah, it's going to be jumping around a lot. We're coming to a head here in the story. We've got the Defiant going to orbit. Tallir and Sato have beamed aboard. Shax is riding the ship. They do beam him back aboard, though, to work the weapons, I guess. But he was, don't join Starfleet, they said. You'll be bored, they said. Oh, I love, okay, so I really enjoy how they've worked Shax into this, and they haven't even dulled his edges from being in this over-the-top Lower Decks cartoon, right? It makes it work, I think. This character, all of these Lower Decks characters feel like they could be over the top, but Shax works here in the same way that Mariner and Boimler worked in Strange New Worlds. I love it.
I agree. But, well, the thing is, you know, some people have this conception of what Starfleet people should act like. But when it comes right down to it, there are so many different races, so many different personalities that, of course, there are going to be people like Shax. Of course, there are going to be people like Boimler and Mariner and Tendi and Rutherford. There are going to be people like that, people who seem different from, you know, buttoned up Captain Picard and whatnot. And that's the beauty of the Star Trek universe, is the variety of things that you can encounter, of people that you can encounter. And to have, you know, to see those people being mixed in, you know, with the people that are the staid and normal type, it's just fun. It's just fun.
Absolutely. And yeah, there's this, and I mean, this is almost maybe blasphemy to say as a Star Trek fan, but whatever. There are people that forget that this is a fictional universe. Mm-hmm. You can kind of do what you want with it. And it's all fiction. Like, it's fine. Yeah. I know, blasphemy, right? But I love this universe. I love it so much. I think people who listen to my stuff, watch my videos, know that by now. But I also, like, I hold it with a reverence, but not as this sacrosanct thing that, like, it must always be this and nothing else. There's so much room to do so many cool things with Star Trek. And I think it's a disservice to Star Trek to hold yourself back from doing some really cool things.
Exactly. The beauty of the Star Trek universe is that it's always evolving.
Mm-hmm.
And it will continue to evolve, hopefully, you know, long after I'm dead. I hope that Star Trek is still around. You know, honestly, I hope the Vulcans show up. I really do. Please, you know, not the Vulcans per se, okay, because that's a fictional race, but I wouldn't mind, you know, seeing first contact with some benevolent species that's like, hey, we see you've got some problems. You want some help?
That would be nice. Yeah.
We could probably clean your atmosphere and your oceans and stuff, and, you know, let's get you off fossil fuels while we're at it. This is just really a bad idea. I mean, didn't you understand what you were doing?
So yeah, I really like that. I think it's good. We're flashing between various things in this. We have a bit more of the Alexander Worf fight. And in this part of it, I love that we get a bit of Worf's internal thoughts here, where, you know, Alexander is roiling with vitality. He's a very tough opponent because he's young and fresh. But maybe Worf also is holding back because he obviously doesn't want to kill his son, whereas Alexander has no such restraint on his actions here because he wants to kill Worf.
And he's also jacked up on drugs.
That too. Yeah. Meanwhile, this fight back in orbit, we get a revelation here, and this was really sad. Captain Meyerson from the Prelude, the Free Comic Book Day issue, is still alive, but he's been converted to the red path here. This was a little bit heartbreaking for sure.
It's almost as bad as watching someone get assimilated by the Borg.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, the one thing I was surprised about, and I don't know if not disappointed, but was that they basically beam him aboard this shuttlecraft that's loaded with explosives. Or he beams aboard the shuttlecraft because he thinks the orb's there. It's loaded with explosives. They crash it into the Klingon ship and destroy it. And I guess there's no saving Captain Meyerson in this one. I was surprised at that. I was like, I thought they were going to, like, bring him back or something.
Yeah, not so much. And it does make you wonder, is anyone who's been jacked up on this Ketracel Red, are they capable of being saved, or are they permanently damaged?
Yeah, it does. I feel like they're I don't know. But yeah. Well, we'll find out maybe later. I don't know. But I was surprised at kind of how cold that was. But I don't know.
You were surprised at how cold it was to see a character that we barely knew and knew absolutely no background on suddenly be converted to the Red Path and killed on a shuttlecraft? You really? That was...
Yeah.
He was there as a red herring and nothing else. He was put in the story to die.
He felt more like an innocent than others did.
I agree.
It was just... It was interesting. There was no thought given to saving him, or nothing voiced about possibly saving him.
Well, how would they have, though?
Well, I don't know. But I'm not criticizing the story for that. I'm just saying, like, oh, interesting. That's not a choice that Star Trek usually makes.
Yeah. So. Well, sometimes, unfortunately, you can't save all the people.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes somebody that maybe could have been saved ends up dying because they were on the stupid ship with the stupid explosives that you need to blow up the other stupid ship. So, yeah, sometimes that happens.
So this fight between Worf and Alexander, this is where it's coming to a head now. And they hash it out a bit. You feel like Alexander is more himself a little bit here. It feels like he's kind of coming through this, but they're actually talking about the issues between Worf and Alexander, as well as the Red Path and all of that stuff, and talking about, you know, honor and all of this. And towards the end of this fight, as Alexander's kind of running out of steam, it seems, Worf's talking about his fear of losing Alexander and his complicity in that loss and the bad decisions that he's made, kind of thing. And I love this last like blow that Alexander's trying to make, and Worf grabs his hand and we get that moment of connection. And Alexander seems to be kind of coming out of this fog a little bit, and he says, "Father?" And then at that moment, though, Kalis comes behind him and skewers him with a bat-leth. Horrible moment.
Yeah, it was. And I saw it coming from a mile away.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
And I just thought, please, please don't actually do what I think you're going to do. Oh, you did it.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's in character for Kalis. So it's not like I felt like anything was out of character. I just didn't want it to happen. I just wanted a win for Alexander for once.
And that's basically how this issue ends. Sisko witnesses this. He's still under the onslaught of this weapon of Kalis's, but again, something's protecting him. But he's reaching out to Spock, saying, "We need the orb that they have aboard there." So we're getting into the end game now. Oh, man, that was tough.
It's really tough.
That was really sad.
Yeah. And honestly, I looked at that panel several times and like, is it possible that I'm not seeing what I'm seeing? And I'm like, nope, I'm seeing what I'm seeing.
Yeah. So Star Trek number 12, we're going to get into what's going on with Sisko, obviously, but we have the Theseus and the Defiant in orbit. Their true test has just begun here, I guess. And yeah, we're going to have them create this device, I guess, that's going to project the power of the orb they have. And interestingly, it kind of operates like the Genesis device, we find out a little bit, which is interesting.
Name drop. Spock has some experience with that.
Yeah, a little bit. So we see a lot of this from Sisko's perspective, which is interesting. We have kind of his internal monologue as this weapon is trying to basically take him apart. And I love this two-page splash here where you kind of have to turn it to read everything. And you've got this spiral that's going into the center. You've got the prophets and Kalis and Cassidy and Jake and Worf and his daughter and Spock in the middle and stuff. This was really cool. Oh, and his dad too. That was cool. I don't know. I thought this was really interesting.
It is interesting, and it was beautifully done.
Mm-hmm. And the cool part is of this as well is he's seeing the crews of the Theseus and the Defiant doing their thing to create this thing. And it's a little bit technobabbly, maybe a little bit Deus Ex Machina, which kind of appropriate for this series, I guess. But I do love how it's all of the people using their expertise and coming together. Like that's been a theme through this crossover is sometimes comic crossovers, and I don't have a huge wealth of knowledge of them, but from the ones that I've read, sometimes like there's an issue dealing with these people, there's an issue dealing with these people, and it kind of weaves together a little bit. This is such a comprehensive crossover with these crews working together, all of these characters interacting. It's been rare to see a crossover for me that does such a good job of integrating everything and really making it feel like a collaborative effort. So kudos to them for doing this and really showcasing that here in this kind of montage.
Yeah, I agree with that, especially when there's so much crew shifting between the Theseus and the Defiant. I don't even remember who was originally on each ship apart from the captains, because it's integrated so well.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's beautifully done. And I think that, honestly, that Star Trek in general is pretty good at crossovers.
Mm-hmm.
So I would expect nothing less from the comics.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's pretty, like I said, it's a little bit Deus Ex Machina. We kind of get this montage of them creating this device that's going to do the thing, right? It's a little bit whatever. So they fire it, and, you know, Sisko's kind of trying to keep himself from being killed by Kalis, and this weapon, I guess weapon maybe is the wrong word, but this effect of the Bajoran orb comes down, and the Genesis-like aspects of it. You see all these vines growing and all of that. That was pretty cool. And of course, you see the vines kind of crawling their way along the ground towards this body of Alexander. And you know what's going to happen here.
Mm-hmm. At least we all hope we know what's going to happen here.
Well, we don't have to wait long, because right after that, the very next page, he snaps awake. And he's now had a crisis of faith because of this cult that he's been involved in and what happened to him when he died and stuff. So
he didn't see the gates of Stovokor.
Yeah. So he's back, though, and it looks like this beam is having the desired effect, countering Kalis's power and bringing Sisko back. So, and bringing Alexander back as well. So that's cool. I guess that's how that wraps up.
Yeah, not what I was expecting. But, you know, I like it when my expectations are disrupted. So, but I'm just like, wow, really? This is how we're doing it? Okay.
But Kalis does get away. He runs like a coward, mm-hmm. It seems. Even his crew is kind of taking notice at this.
Yeah, because that's what he is. And all this bluster was just to camouflage that fact.
Meanwhile, in sickbay, Martok is coming too, and I love his... By Greythor's grip, I remember. I was saved by Starfleet. No other ships have such disrespectful lighting.
Grumpy old man.
Disrespectful lighting of Starfleet. I love it. But we do get this scene where I come on, Starfleet security, do better here.
Yeah, really.
You have the leader of the Klingon Empire in your sick bay, and Sela manages to be alone with him in there. And man, she injects him with this derivative of a toxin found within the Seti eel. That's the Khan's brain bug thing. And it makes the brain pliant. And yeah, so she's going to get information out of Martok to please her Romulan handlers, of course.
If she gets anything good, I mean, honestly, at this point, what could he tell her that would actually be of value after everything that's just gone down?
I mean, anything from like the codes to get through the net at the neutral zone or something like that. Like,
yeah, but they're going to change all that. They know that Sela's been hanging around. They're going to change all those codes.
Now, there'll be something. I'm sure there'll be something that comes into play later in the story. I'm sure.
I don't know, her grand designs always seem to just fall on their face, you know?
That's true. She is a royal F up.
Yep. She really is. True. And she keeps thinking she's so smart.
So yeah, basically what's left is kind of the wrap up, the celebrations. Worf and Sisko come to terms, which is good to see for sure. Lore is out there, unfortunately. So Lore, at the end, of course, meets up with Kalis's ship, I guess, and seems to be kind of convincing his crew to follow him instead of Kalis, which, I'm not looking forward to the fallout from that.
No.
And that's kind of where that ends. So I guess setting up the next story arc in Star Trek and Star Trek Defiant, because the Day of Blood is over, thankfully. I enjoyed it, but I have to say this issue was almost a little, and I mean, they've set up so much, it's kind of hard not to do this. It almost felt a little bit anticlimactic.
I agree.
I enjoyed it still.
Yeah. The whole resolution was just like, okay, that kind of came out of nowhere. It's like, oh, This is like the Genesis device. Like, really? That is a little too convenient.
Yeah.
Especially since, you know, that stuff should have all been classified. Why is it now declassified? I mean, I know that there are now small portable Genesis devices, but come on. How did that happen? Starfleet, Get your stuff together and lock it down.
Yeah. I guess it is that the orb of, what was the orb? I can't remember, but like that particular
orb of creation.
The orb of creation. Yeah. It created an energy wave similar to that of the Genesis device. But yeah, the fact that they all knew that was a little bit suspect.
Mm, yeah. That niggled a bit at me.
I generally enjoyed this. I thought it was overall a good story, even though maybe the ending wasn't quite as strong as I would have liked, but I love a lot of the character work in this. I love the pairing up of various characters that we got. And for as naive as Data was, those scenes between him and Lore were so good.
So, so good. And I think, you know, honestly, character is really the number one part of a story.
Mm-hmm.
And if you serve your characters right, then you've done a good story. And so I can often forgive a lot of those plot contrivances, because are you still telling a good story with the characters? Because a good plot will not be a good plot if you don't have good characters to carry it. A good character can carry anything.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really the most important thing. And the characterization of all of these people that we knew and people that we were only recently introduced to, I think, is just really spot on.
Yeah, absolutely. And like the new characters like Talir and Lily, like they feel real, realized characters, like you say, and they fit really well in with all of these very seasoned characters. And I mean, Spock and Scotty, right? Like Two of the oldest characters in Star Trek from 1966. Like, that's great that all of these characters can feel part of this cohesive whole altogether. It's so good.
Yes.
So I guess we're still going to talk about Shax's best day, but the Day of Blood, everything altogether, I'm going to give a rating on that. And I think it's going to be, I'm going to say one resurrected Sisko and Alexander making Worf's day.
There are so many ways that I could go about this, but it's got to be one big old Shax riding the Defiant before they get into orbit.
Well, then let's use that as a segue to talk about the final issue that's in this collection. And I'm so excited to talk about this one. Mm-hmm. The biggest surprise to me in all of this, Star Trek Day of Blood, Shax's Best Day, written by Ryan North with art by Derek Charm. And Charm is the best word for the artist of this, because this is so charming and so good.
Yeah. This entire issue, no notes. Every single page is perfection. Every single rendering of, you know, other Star Trek characters we haven't seen in the quote-unquote Lower Deck style, spot on. It's just perfection from first page to last page. I have no issues with this issue.
Yeah. Chax and his pipe that he's using to mow his way through these red path Klingons and I have so many good things to say about this. The little like commentary at the bottom of every page was brilliant and probably one of my best things, my favorite things about this. The outright calling out of fascism and relating it to things that are going on in our world today and being relevant and subversive and awesome, like comics should be. This has all of that. It's so good. And it's got like meta commentary on the ridiculousness of things that happen in comics. And it's like, this is the best medium for this because it's ridiculous. Like, I love this. It's so good.
It is so good. I need to read it about 5 more times because every time I read it, I notice something that I didn't notice before because there's a lot going on in this issue. And it's just sheer joy from start to finish.
Like, okay, so for example, like there's stuff that is just so over the top. So at one point, Chax is in this like pod hurtling into the atmosphere. There's a Klingon on the outside and he gets outside and they both have a fist fight while they're like kind of burning up in the atmosphere. And like the little blurb at the bottom, other media wish they could have fist fights in free fall with a Klingon on fire from atmospheric reentry. Comics, man. Best art form there is. It's so good. When he beams out and like appears about a foot over the planet's surface and then right to the ground. Oh, good. Klingon transporters don't preserve momentum. Good to know. Meanwhile, in the background, the Klingon, no! Splat. And then the like ship hits him. Oh my god. It's so ridiculous. Chax doesn't even turn around. He's not even looking. It's so good.
Just looking at the art makes me happy.
Why'd we put in that panel of Chax looking at the Defiance plasma vents like he was thinking of a plan? It's probably nothing. Let's keep reading and forget all about that mysterious panel.
One of my favorite things is the whole... We'll get to it, of course, but... Please state the nature of the combat emergency.
Yeah, the emergency combat hologram. Guy's talking about. Yeah.
That's okay. So okay. Good. Sorry. Whew. Okay. I'm back.
Can I also talk about? I mean, we're just kind of jumping all over this, but like when he's fighting the guy on the outside of the Defiant hull, and he's like the sound effects for the punches, Spock. Kirk, Garak, Chax. And then the little thing at the end, there's another move Chax has that sounds like Harry Kim, but he didn't do it here. Look, we need to save something for the sequel.
Oh, please tell me there's going to be a sequel, or better yet, just a series following Chax around in his daily life, because I would read every issue.
Well, okay, so here's a bit of news that just hit in the last week. By coincidence, I had just read this issue for this episode. I hadn't read it before, but so Chax's Best Day has been nominated for Best Single Issue / One Shot at the 2024 Eisner Awards.
Yep.
So congratulations to Ryan North and Derek Charm. That is so awesome. It is so well deserved.
It is.
I had no idea, like, honestly, that this issue would be so good. And like, I don't think I'm overhyping this. It is just the perfect thing to have in this comic medium. And it's this silly story, but it's silly in all the best ways. It's so good.
It truly is. The thing is, comics are a great medium to do whatever you want. And the fact that they are going over the top because it's Chax, it fits. It fits. Yeah. Especially, you know, just you think the Klingon's gone. Oh, no, he's back in a combat mech. What? He's got a freaking mech? when? She's like, oh, yes, this is a test thing I've been working on. It's like, she's like, okay. And now he's got a Gundam and he's gonna take him down. But Shax ain't gonna go down.
And I mean, yeah, if you want to read a comic that talks about fascism in exactly the right way and putting it in the frame it needs to be put in, giving, I think, astute commentary on how fascists work and why that is so attractive to some people and why it has to be fought at all costs. Shax is the perfect character to do that with. And then also, like I said, to have a fist fight while in free fall, burning up in an atmosphere, as well as throwing a whole bunch of batliths in the air and having them return like boomerangs to kill your enemies. This comic is for you. It's so good.
The point where he's got... this, it made me laugh so freaking hard that I had an asthma attack. All the things that he wished he had said.
Yes. Okay. I was hoping you were going to say that. I love that. A few weeks later, Shax is going to sit up straight in bed in the middle of the night, furious with regret as he realizes he should have told that Klingon, "Pipes to meet you." But then the way they pay it off too later. So there's another one. A few weeks later, Shax is just getting back to sleep. But then his eyes slam open, fully awake again, as he realizes he should have said, "Knees to meet you," as he, you know, takes these Klingons out at the knees. But...
oh, I found it.
Oh, here. Where he uses the transporter to beam away a Klingon's arms.
Yes, that's what I was going for. And the fact that he takes this arm and he's got a sword and he throws both of them.
Before that, though, just as the payoff to the previous stuff, would you look at that? Now we're both unarmed. And the little thing.
Nailed it.
A few weeks later, Shax is finally falling asleep again, content, a smile on his face that won't leave for the rest of the night. He did at least nail that line. But yes, then what does he do with the arm? Because that is great.
Yeah, he just throws the arm. He just throws the arm at another Klingon. Mm-hmm. And he's just like, what? Where did you? Who's? Just staring at the arm on the floor.
Because he's got the arm in one hand and the sword in the other. He throws both at these two Klingons. The one Klingon takes the sword, and the other Klingon, this arm hits him with the sound effect, spleck. The Klingon's like, what? Where did you? Who's? Just so confused.
And when he's set the auto destruct and then he's running to find a little shuttle and he puts his hand on the panel and goes beep beep boop.
Oh,
oh, self destruct in 6 seconds. 5, 4, 3. Launch! 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 Oh, I was just dying through this entire thing. Just dying. And of course, you know, he thinks he's gotten away, and that's when the free fall fighting happens.
Yeah.
And you think, okay, this guy can't come back from this, right? No, he's got a mech. Where was the mech? Where was the mech? Where was the mech? Why is it just suddenly there?
It's great.
It's just, it makes no sense. It doesn't need to.
Yeah, well, I guess because the guy in the mech is the guy from engineering that got hit with the arm.
Yes.
So I guess he got in it and got out of the ship right before it blew up, is my guess. But you from engineering? The one you hit with his brother's arm, yes. Before you blew up our ship, that is. I love that.
Oh, and it just has so many great moments, like him running from the mech going, catch me if you can, next panel. Gah! He's been caught. Oh, so funny. And basically, Shax got the mech exactly where he wants it, of course. And, perfectly positioned above the plasma vent.
Yes.
Melted mech. Wonderful. Melted mech. But the best, I think, one of the best things is taking an entire page
from one of the previous issues and redoing it with Bellana and Tom in this in the Lower Deck style. The whole thing. Wait, Bellana, we're good. We're good? Yeah, the deflector dish we didn't have, we have it now. And just all of that, the stuff that just happened from their point of view. But we see everything that happened to make that deflector dish active and just, and why he wanted to just ride the Defiant like, you know, a cowboy. But the final thing, of course, is Shax to Bridge. It's getting really hard to breathe now, so I'm actually ready whenever you are.
I did also like, again, using a moment of silence in like good, you know, they're like, okay, take off. Yes, ma'am. They're on the bridge. Beepity boop. Beep. And Blonde is like, screw it. I have to know. What is he doing out there? You read my mind on screen.
I do also like all, what looks like all the alternate covers for this issue.
Yeah.
All the different Shax art.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the interesting thing about Shax, if you've watched Lower Decks, you already know this, is that he seemed to be at first a very one-dimensional character, but Shax got all the layers. He has so many layers. And to see this big, tough guy also be emotionally aware is amazing. And really, he's just such a great character. Please, guys, do a Shax series, please.
Oh, totally. He is a character that, like, outside of, like, when Lower Decks ends, I hope we see, I mean, I hope we see all those characters again somehow, but Shax is so good. This was the perfect character here. So, like you said earlier, top marks to this, no notes. It's perfect. It may sound like I'm just overhyping this. No, this is so good. You need to read it. Even if you have no interest in Day of Blood outside of, I guess, listening to this whole podcast for some reason, if you haven't already, read Shax's Best Day. Absolutely. Congratulations to them on the nomination. I really hope it wins. I have no idea what they're up against, but this deserves all of the awards.
Agreed. I think it should be a shoe-in, frankly. And all the other nominees should just go home.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I guess that's it for Day of Blood. This has been kind of an extra long episode. I really do appreciate all of you for sticking with it and listening, though. I hope you enjoyed our coverage of this, and more to come with the Star Trek and Star Trek Defiant comics going forward, as well as other comics that we're going to be covering in the future as well. So thank you all so much for listening. Thank you, Brandy, for joining me today.
That's been my distinct pleasure. Of course, I had a great time.
Excellent. Well, we look forward to seeing you all in an upcoming episode. And until then, as always, stay positive. Positively Trek is produced and edited by me, Dan Gunther, and co-produced by Barry DeFord on Treaty 8 territory, the home of the Beaver, Cree, Dene, and Métis people, whose histories, languages, and cultures we respect. We acknowledge the many First Nations, Métis, and Inuit who have lived in and cared for these lands for generations.
At Humana, our Medicare Advantage plans give you coverage and care you can count on, along with guided support to help you feel your best. You could have a plan with a $0 premium or an all-in-one plan that may include medical and prescription coverage, as well as routine dental, vision, and hearing. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.
Seal off drafts, dust, and moisture with MD Weather Stripping from Menards. A well-sealed home is more comfortable and energy efficient. We have the largest selection of in-stock weather stripping with over 130 products available to take home and start lowering your energy bills today. Save big money on MD Weather Stripping right now at Menards. And check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals.
Save big money at Menards.